This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media Technology News Network. We're about to speak with John Landwehr, who's the official at Adobe Systems, who's the group product manager for Adobe Security Solutions Group. Welcome to Utopia Media Technology News Network.
Thank you.
Why don't you just say a little bit to let some of our listeners who aren't too knowledgeable about it know a little bit more about Adobe, its origins, how PostScript came to be, and how everything was built on that, essentially.
Well, Adobe is a provider of solutions that essentially help people and businesses communicate better, and we have a number of very popular products in the marketplace. Ranging from Acrobat and Photoshop and Premiere and InDesign and Illustrator. And these products cross from the creative professional market to the consumer market with products like Photoshop Album. And we also have a number of solutions in the enterprise market, which have evolved out of PDF as a very popular document format and has now essentially morphed into the intelligent document that provides organizations with the ability to not only do document generation, but also to collaborate more effectively on electronic documents inside and outside the firewall, to use the intelligent document as a method for automating processes, essentially using it for forms and workflow. And layered on top of that, of course, is an element of document control and security, such that information that is being shared inside and outside the company, whether it's being collaborated on or routed as part of a form, can have certain controls put on it to provide controls for who can access the information, what can they do with it, as well as providing assurances of where that information came from or its authenticity, fact that the information has not been changed or the integrity of it, as well as providing a audited environment to see who did access the information, who opened it, who printed it, who copied it, who modified it, or who tried to do any of those things but did not have access to do so. And essentially, the technology that we have to provide those security capabilities is built on PDF as the intelligent document, and we have a number of security-related products ranging from Acrobat on the desktop to the Policy Server, which was a recently announced product that provides many of these new granular capabilities such as who can access the document, document expiration, document revocation, version control, and auditing.
Talk a little bit about that Policy Server. Is it released yet? Is it about to be released?
The Policy Server was just recently announced and will be going into customer pilots this summer and will be shipping by the end of the year.
And what, again, are its capabilities and how does the interface work?
Sure. So the Policy Server works in conjunction with Acrobat and the free Adobe Reader on the desktop. When an author creates a document that they want to protect, they essentially assign a policy to that document. The most popular policy that organizations have is something like company or organization confidential, which would say only users within that organization would be able to view that document. The user interface is very easy to use, such that the author clicks on the secure button. They see a drop-down list of the policies they can choose from that have been specified by their IS organization, and they can also create their own policies. Within the policy, it provides access controls for who can open the document, either based on named users or groups of users within the organization that may come out of a directory or even the HR database. And once you control who can open the document, you can further control who can print it, who can modify it, who can copy and paste from the document. You can provide auditing of any of those functions. You can set a document as to when it will expire, either on a absolute or relative date, to say that maybe a price list will expire by the end of the year, or this document will expire 7 years from now, which is very popular in the records retention world. And the author can even go in and set a document to be immediately revoked, which is often used for version control, so that if a new version of a document is available, you can make sure that nobody's relying on a previous version by immediately expiring those documents.
You mean it could say the policy could be once it's read, it expires, or once it's viewed once, it expires?
There are a number of granular controls that we can provide for permissions of what happens to a document. There is also an API that we provide and a number of security partners that we're working with that can even extend the capabilities beyond what we have today.
Now, you mentioned that individuals, if they're entitled to, can set policies. The company creates a drop-down list with policies. Will Adobe be shipping this with some sort of default policies to start with, or does every company need to essentially set them up on its own when they get the product?
Well, we believe that Company Confidential will probably be a very popular default policy for many organizations. It's difficult to go beyond that because every organization is different in terms of having different organizational structures on who should have access to information across finance, legal, engineering, research and development. And we believe that organizations will certainly create a number of organization-wide policies, and in fact, in many organizations, certainly the government, they already have information classification policies that they use to classify information today. They can now move those into the electronic world and effectively put those in the drop-down as well.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the audit function. Say a little bit more about that and how useful that's going to be for governments to monitor corporations.
Well, the auditing feature is designed to allow the author of a document to set auditing capabilities to determine whether they want to know who opened the document, who printed the document, who modified the document, who copied and pasted from the document.
With times, too, I suppose, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that information will be kept on the policy server.
Right.
Auditing is an optional feature that the author can decide to turn on or turn off, and the IS organization can also specify whether auditing is even allowed in the organization based on their corporate usage policies for electronic communication. And there is also notification capabilities to let users know whether they are being audited for certain actions that they're taking on a particular document.
Can that be done surreptitiously as well? I mean, in other words, do they need to be notified that it's being audited, or can they be audited without them knowing they're being audited?
So the IS administrator of the policy server can specify whether or not they want to enable auditing at all, or whether the auditing information is displayed to the user or not.
Right.
In many organizations, employees sign, as part of their new hire process, consent to be electronically monitored throughout their business, in which case organizations don't need to display that information to the user on every document.
Okay, let's take that example that you just mentioned and sort of look at it from the perspective of this new technology. By the way, have we talked about it? Is it called the policy server? What's the product called exactly?
Yes, it is called the Adobe Policy Server.
Someone's out in Iowa, and he or she's going to come to work in Sunnyvale or something, or Mountain View, and they need to sign one or more employment documents. Walk us through how that would work using this system, and explain a little bit along the side, if you want, what's going to happen with PKI and digital signatures and so on, so that the signatures can be known as valid.
Certainly. So in the auditing world, many organizations have corporate policies in terms of what is allowed to be audited within the organization, and many organizations, as part of their electronic communications usage policies, which govern how email is used, how remote access is used, very often that includes notification of what is audited, and it is up to the IS administrator of this Adobe Policy Server to determine what capabilities are allowed for authors of documents to set, whether auditing is allowed, or what features can be audited, and whether there is user notification. Of course, if you are sending documents outside of your organization, the auditing notification should be used to show that Essentially, it's like you receive a certified letter from the Postal Service.
Right.
When they show up at your doorstep, they won't give you the letter unless you sign for it.
Right.
That same sort of capability can be implemented using our technology so that a user says, if you open this document, you'll be tracked, but it gives you the option to not open the document.
Sounds like you could use it for subpoenas as well. If people have to for legal notice, if people are sent a legal notice and if they sign that they got it, then they've signed that they've indicated in a serious legal way that they have. So
there are certain laws and regulations that have to do with the eSign Act of 2000, which do stipulate what kinds of electronic communications can take place for. Very specific types of communication. For example, eviction notices, I believe, cannot be sent electronically.
Right.
So there are some kinds of things that are not yet to that level to make sure that the people are given sufficient in-person notice of significant changes in their life, I guess would be one way to put it.
Serving divorce papers. I suppose, though, people could sign a document accepting the ability to receive documents that they really don't want electronically. If they figure they're going to get you anyway, that you might as well do it electronically and have an electronic copy of it. Talk about PKI, public key infrastructure, and whether that has any importance and significance in this environment.
So Adobe has been utilizing public key infrastructure since Acrobat 4 in 1999 to provide the capability to encrypt documents as well as digitally sign documents.
Right.
Working with security partners such as RSA, Entrust, VeriSign, GeoTrust, a variety of hardware token manufacturers, smart card vendors like ActiveCard, all of these fit in very well into the ecosystem. With the policy server, PKI is actually not required.
Oh, okay.
The policy server includes key management capabilities that integrate with an organization's existing LDAP or Active Directory authentication environment.
Right.
So as long as the users have a username and a password, that's all they need to protect the document. It isn't a requirement for them to also have certificates rolled out to every user.
It is a requirement?
It is not.
It is not. Okay. So within the organization, then people can either when they're initiating a document or whether they're when they're accessing it, their username and password issued by the organization is sufficient to set up or descramble the encryption.
That is correct. And typically, that username and password is tied into a single sign-on type of environment that is used to log the user into their computer, log onto the VPN, their email. Their enterprise applications like SAP, and we don't require users to have to remember yet another username and a password.
Right.
We can tie into the existing authentication systems that they already have in place.
Okay, now what about when these documents go out of the enterprise to another enterprise, to the government, to the public? Does PKI come into play then?
So PKI can certainly be used to protect documents, and we provide LDAP integration to look up public keys when encrypting a document. Again, going back to the capabilities that we provided since Acrobat 4, when sending documents outside the organization using the policy server, many organizations have external directories of usernames and passwords.
Uh-huh.
The best example of that would be your bank that does online banking.
Right.
They have a list of account numbers and PINs or passwords used to access their home banking site.
Right.
Which is separate than the username password database for all their employees.
Right.
So it's a completely separate authentication directory. The policy server can tie into one or both of those such that if a bank wants to send an electronic statement securely out to one of its customers, it can leverage the account number and PIN, username, password that their extranet users are already using on their corporate portal.
In fact, all of the people who have accounts at a bank are extranet users. Is that
exactly?
And have the same relationship in essence with the bank's data management system that an employee does in an intranet that's being used for the to support policy server internally?
Yes, it is very often based on the same underlying technology, LDAP, Active Directory, sorts of things, and the policy server can tie into both a directory inside the company and firewall, as well as one that would be sitting in the DMZ area of the firewall used by extranet users.
So that means any organization, whether it's NBC News or Wells Fargo Bank or the, I don't know what the IRS's system is on this, that essentially that's issued usernames and passwords to its, or credit card companies, that's issued username and passwords to its extranet users, could be piggybacked upon by this system, and if a relationship is set up between the enterprise and that extranet owner, then all of those users can essentially be incorporated into the system.
That is exactly right. And we take it one step further that if an enterprise wants to send a document to a new business partner, and that particular employee is not yet registered on the extranet portal, you can type in anybody's email address as you're protecting a document with the policy server. The policy server will then check to see if an account has been created, and if it has not been created, it will send them a separate email message to that account saying you're going to be receiving a secure document, but to open it you have to create an account. Here's where you go to create that account. So we essentially provide a bootstrapping process to have document recipients be automatically added to an extranet account system.
So that could go for anyone. You could send, if you had an email list of everyone in the state of California, you send them the email and say, we want to send you a secure document. Please come to this site. Come to the site. They type in a new username other than their email address?
They could use their email address, and then they would just be required to
make up a password.
Find a password, exactly.
And then they sort of become they become extranet users on the fly, in essence.
Exactly.
And then they're liable. They're able to participate in the process.
That is exactly right. And one of the things that Adobe is really focused on is the user experience across all of our applications. To make software easy for creative professionals, for the consumers, also for enterprise users. And the most important thing in security is actually ease of use.
Okay, yes.
Ahead of security, at least in my book. And the reason for that is that if security is not easy to use, it doesn't matter how secure it is. People won't use it. They'll forget to use it. They'll try to avoid it. So it's our goal to make security very, very easy to use, very transparent, not only for the author, but also the recipients of these documents, so that it makes them easier to exchange information securely.
So specifically, let's say some marketing campaign wanted to take some of your other products in Photoshop and Illustrator and designs a really nice, attractive advertisement with some links to places to buy the stuff, and they only want to send it out to select people. Then they can essentially either advertise or mail with permission to people and sign them up for the extranet for that advertising event, and then give them access to that file.
Absolutely. You could have a coupon within that file that could either be applied online or even printed and brought into a store. And if a user who is authorized to receive that document forwards on that document to an unauthorized recipient, they simply won't be able to open it.
Right. What's the interface going to look like in that scenario for the person? They get an email that says, we'd like to send you something. We want to do it securely. Please go to the site. They go to the site. They put in their their password. They get the password. What happens next? Are they going to go to a site? Are they going to get email? And what's the screen going to look like for them to or is it all going to be transparent and they'll just get it if they've, where do they put in their password, in other words?
Right. We're working very hard to make this transparent. Within the enterprise, if you have a single sign-on environment with Windows and you receive a PDF document on your email, off a portal, off a CD-ROM, wherever it happens to be, and you open that document, if single sign-on is enabled through Windows, as long as you've logged into your Windows computer within the corporation, it won't ask you to re-enter username and password. Acrobat and Reader will automatically utilize that login that you've already provided. If you are outside an organization, the single sign-on environment from Windows won't work. And if you're getting something from your bank, you're not logging into Windows with your bank's password.
Right.
So it won't matter how you receive the PDF document. As soon as you double-click it and it opens an Acrobat or Reader, it will open up a username and password box.
Okay.
And that box is customizable so that the author can say, enter your account number and PIN,
right,
or your username and PIN, or your username and password. And you can even include more specific information to say, please enter your Finance Corp credential or whatever the name of the bank is. So it's very customized, personal, easy for the recipient to understand what it is they need to do.
So in other words, when they click, they can get the file. When they click to open the file, a box will come up saying, please provide the information necessary to identify yourself. And once that's been provided, then the system will read it and release the file.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And this will work on the Windows platform, the Mac platform, as well as Linux on the desktop.
Okay. Do you have any competition? I haven't heard of anybody who has anything in any way like any of this. Are you just out there way in front on this, or do you have any competition?
Well, we have a advantage in that PDF has been around for over 10 years now, and we first started providing rights management capabilities in PDF in Acrobat 2 back in 1994. PDF has, of course, become a very popular file format inside an organization, and especially when sharing documents across organizations. We have the benefit of having developed the free Adobe Reader, which has hundreds of millions of distributions right now, and many new PCs ship with the Reader pre-installed. And that Reader essentially gives us an advantage of having a security client that has been deployed for users so that they don't need to have additional plugins or software to manipulate and work with these documents. We want to definitely provide a seamless integrated out-of-box experience for users of both the full Acrobat as well as the free Reader. Certainly security technology is being used in a number of different areas. For example, secure email has
right.
been around for quite some time that an author and a recipient can sign up. And it requires PKI to do that effectively. And the challenge, of course, is that every endpoint needs to have the secure email package installed and configured. And if somebody doesn't have that, they won't be able to receive your email. And the other thing that's challenging is that with secure email, once you receive the email,
right.
you can forward it.
Right.
And by protecting the information at the document level, it doesn't matter where it's stored, it doesn't matter how it's transported. Security always stays with the data in the document. And you can use any email client, you can post it on a web portal, go anywhere. The other area that organizations have been deploying security is around content management systems.
Right.
And they do a great job of creating a virtual file cabinet on the server to control which users have access to which drawers and which files, provide access controls, provide auditing information, and even version control. The challenge has been that once you pull the file out of the virtual file cabinet on the server, there's no longer any security on it to prevent that document from being forwarded to somebody that shouldn't see it. There is no longer any persistent auditing. There's no longer any persistent version control that once you have the old version of the document sitting on your desktop, you might not know that there's a new version available.
So is there any, would there be a purpose in using the policy server to once you take it out or of the
exactly.
virtual server and then
exactly.
it protect it outside?
Exactly. So we see a significant opportunity for organizations to use the policy server with their content management systems and corporate portals so that the content management system protects documents on the server, and then once the document is pulled off the server, the same policies, auditing information, permissions can apply persistently to that document no matter where it travels within the enterprise.
Right. What about versions of the reader, the free Acrobat reader that's out there that makes this possible? Is there a minimum level of that? Will a lot of people have to upgrade in order to take advantage of the features that you're talking about now?
To take advantage of some of the new features that we've been talking about, there will be an upgrade of our client products to support those capabilities.
Does that have a version number yet? Or?
We don't.
Okay.
We don't.
But the version that's out there now is 6.0?
That is correct.
But so essentially this is going to be better and better than that, and people will need to users will end up having to download the new client?
To take advantage of some of the new capabilities that we've discussed, a new version will be required, yes.
Okay. Talk a little bit about them. We've talked a lot about the sort of features. Say a little bit about the technology involved here. This is essentially using encryption and decryption to make the security happen. Is that right?
That is correct. And we have licensed the encryption algorithms from RSA in their BeSafe toolkits to provide AES encryption, which is the latest and greatest encryption algorithms that we're adding to our products to provide the encryption capabilities so that only the intended recipients can actually decrypt and view the document.
I don't know what the relevant metric is, but how secure are they? How encrypted are they? How difficult would it be to try to crack the security around them?
I am not aware of anybody that has cracked the AES algorithm, and it is in widespread use in the commercial and government sector. It is based on encryption keys, and I don't recall off the top of the head how many combinations of keys there are, but it's a lot.
Okay.
And it is going to be significantly very challenging to take an encrypted document and decrypt it. At the same time, we do point out that no security solution in the market from any vendor will offer 100% security.
Right.
And we provide multiple layers of assurances for our security capabilities, and organizations can choose to have more or less security depending on their needs. For example, in the capabilities that we have shipping with Acrobat 6 today, we can use PKI, we can use 2048-bit keys. I actually use a what's called a hardware security module. It is a USB token. The one I have is made by Sony as part of their Puppy product line. It's a USB key that stores my encryption key on it and my digital signature key.
Right.
And to actually use the token, it falls into what's called three-factor authentication. So to sign a document as me, you would need to first get your hands on the token.
Right.
Second, you would need to know the password that is protecting the token.
Right.
And third, the token even has a built-in fingerprint reader.
Right.
So you would need to have one of my fingers.
Right.
And I'm not telling you which one.
Or a model of it. They did get around that one in Gattaca, although not very convincingly with fingerprint scanning. Talk a little bit about the model you're using for selling this. Is it going to be everyone has to buy it from Adobe? You have resellers. Are you setting up? Will service bureaus be available? Does a corporation just essentially buy a package and put it on a server and they're ready to go? How are you going to be marketing this?
So the policy server will definitely be available through our direct sales force, which is global. And is focused on selling enterprise solutions.
Anything you want to say about the cost to the corporations and what's kind of sliding scale based on seats or size or usage? Or?
We have not yet announced pricing for the product. We are looking to do so in the coming months, certainly as we are closer to having the customer pilots in place. The common metric for enterprise applications is usually around the number of users that are utilizing the system, and we'll have more information available for you on the specifics in the next few months.
All right. Who do you expect to be the biggest users of this? Corporations, government agencies, nonprofits, media organizations? What do you expect will be the main usages of this system?
Well, this particular product, the Adobe Policy Server, is really focused on enterprise document controls, so providing access controls to which users have access to information in an enterprise or across enterprises in a B2B or G2G environment where sharing secure information is important. As far as that goes, certainly the government has a number of requirements to share information securely, not only within an agency, but also securing information across agencies is a very hot topic right now.
Right.
Certainly within the financial services sector, it is important to not only have the corporate information secured and information on mergers and acquisitions, but also privacy. So as you are collecting Social Security numbers, bank account numbers, other personal identifying information, that can be secured at the data level within documents as they are being exchanged from customers to the corporation. We're also seeing some interest in manufacturing as design plans are being developed that basically describe in complete detail how to build any sort of widget.
Right.
Whether it is an electronic gizmo or even a pharmaceutical drug, the intellectual property that needs to be protected is significant,
right.
And organizations want to provide controls on that. Go ahead.
Two specific, or maybe just one. Medical records. Medical records are being generated voluminously all the time. Do you have a special team there that's going to be trying to provide these for hospitals, doctors, associations, insurance companies, and so on?
Certainly, any corporation that is dealing with personally identifying information needs to protect that information, whether it is healthcare history, financial records, government identification, that information needs to be protected in transit across the internet and also well protected within the company. There is actually an interesting recent law that passed in California, which is SB 1386, which is sort of a very groundbreaking and leading edge in that it says if an organization that does business with California citizens believes that personal identifying information has been compromised, they're required to notify all suspected customers.
Right.
And if the number of suspected customers reaches a certain threshold, they have to issue a press release and proactively go to the media and say, we've been hacked.
Right.
That's showing the severity and the seriousness of protecting personal identifying information. I think it's unfortunate we're getting to the point now where all of us know somebody who has had their identity stolen.
Right.
And this is certainly a big problem in the electronic world, and it even goes to the paper world.
But in fact, this provides a possibly a powerful tool against identity theft by blocking the capture of the essential data elements that are required to do it.
Yes, and to ensure that only the intended recipients of this information can view it. And even if somebody steals the file or steals the computer that has the file,
right,
they won't be able to view the information in that document.
It's like in the fairy tales when the villain steals the magic chest or something and takes it back to his cave in the forest, back to his cave and tries to open it. He can't open it. It doesn't do him any good because he doesn't
have it.
Yep,
that's a good analogy.
What about e-government? Is this something that's going to make e-government cheaper, faster, easier, more prevalent, do you think?
Well, we're actually seeing quite a bit of activity in e-government for electronic documents. Of course, there's been a significant volume of paper-based forms and documents in the government as well as in the corporate world, and there are significant cost savings by moving those documents online. It's easier to transport them, create them, store them, and you don't have the printing, mailing, and file cabinet space costs associated with it. But there are many processes from the paper world that cannot move online unless adequate security measures are in place.
Such as?
For example, having the confidentiality or the privacy maintained in that particular document as it's being distributed across the network, either inside or outside the organization, and especially on the internet, as well as providing authenticity and integrity or digital signatures. So that as I'm filling out a form online and submitting it, I can digitally sign it so the organization knows it really was me signing it and that it has not been changed since I did sign it.
And that's an essential aspect of government work. And so, so this ought to provide a benefit in that area. Given all of your efforts to make this easy to use, do you expect then that the applications that we're talking about here will become ubiquitous within 2-3 years?
Well, certainly PDF is a very popular file format already, and many customers are using the security capabilities that we do provide today in our shipping products. And we believe that security is a very important element of electronic transactions inside an organization and with business partners and customers. So we are very excited about the market opportunity.
Now it seems, let's try to envision that everything goes great, the product works without without flaws, a lot of people adopt it, it's all in place. What we'd have then is a situation where there's a lot of ability to create, transfer, and make accessible and to the proper people this information. Although the term lockdown comes to mind, that for good or ill, this information is going to be very hard to get at if you're not entitled to get it, which is the purpose of it. And I'm wondering whether that, in the old days when you could, if you were doing an talking to someone over their desk and you knew how to read a paper upside down, you might find something out that maybe you needed to know, maybe you shouldn't have known, and so on. That's going to be way gone if this goes into place. And I'm wondering if you could just comment on the benefits and possible downsides of having a really locked down flow of information around government, enterprise, and so on.
Well, we see significant benefits for organizations because they've been requesting this technology. It's really been a customer-driven product. For example, if it were healthcare information, you would really want to make sure that only the intended parties can view illness of patients.
Right.
That is a very sensitive topic nowadays. Certainly around financial privacy as well, corporate intellectual property, making sure that design plans aren't leaving organizations. Certainly secure government communications is very important to make sure that that information is not getting the wrong hands. And as we have been developing this product and using it internally, we have found that users are in many cases surprised by the change in technology. And some examples of that I can give you are that there were documents that a person received an email from an author that they were allowed to view, and they forwarded that document to somebody else that the author did not want them to see.
Right.
So they got the document in their email, they opened it up and said, sorry, you can't open it.
Right.
And they were very surprised. It's like, well, I have access to this document. How come I can't open it?
Right.
We also see situations where a user may be in a particular role in their company and they have access to certain file server resources and they download a bunch of documents to their computer and then they change roles. As they change roles, they may not have access to that previous server anymore.
Right.
So they understand, oh, I can't go and get any more files from them.
Right.
And the day before they change roles, they may go to that server and download everything they can, saying, I may need this for my new job.
Right.
But the moment that their HR record changes, all those documents that they downloaded will no longer be able to be opened because their role does not allow it.
So if they wanted to take all the plans for the next generation of their company's software or airplane or boat or whatever it was to their next company, they can't.
Exactly. Even if they have downloaded it to their home computer or burned it to a CD-ROM and have that at home, they won't be able to open those documents within seconds of the IS administrator in the organization turning off their account.
Because essentially their authority to view it has been revoked.
Exactly.
So overall then, you think this is going to have a lot more pluses than minuses?
Yeah, Yes, and it's going to be up to the organization to make sure it's deployed properly and that they're building the policies in an appropriate manner and using the auditing in an appropriate manner and really thinking about who should be in a policy. When you create a company confidential policy, it's pretty straightforward because you include everybody. But as you start to get into other work groups and organizational departments, organizations are going to have to think about who they want to have in a policy.
Right. So, in fact, they'll need to be explicit about what may have been kind of informal in some cases.
Yes. Okay. That's exactly right.
Mark, sorry to jump in.
Sure.
I know you're recording this. I just want to make sure. I had John for a half an hour. And,
right.
I figured this is a good break in the conversation. John, let me know if you have another meeting. If you go off somewhere.
I've got about another 5 minutes.
Okay.
And then I'm running late, but
Let me focus on some other things. I'll do it faster. Smart initiatives is a concept that would let people sign initiative petitions online over the internet instead of having to be harassed outside of supermarkets. Is this a technology that would make that more viable?
I believe our digital signature technology would be a good fit for any types of documents that are distributed over the internet and want to be a replacement for a paper and wet ink signature.
Okay, would that also apply to internet voting?
Internet voting
with the ballot being the document. And
yes,
that's certainly a
hot topic right now, and I do believe that elements of the digital signature technology that is in the market today, as well as the confidentiality and privacy elements, could certainly have some applicability into e-voting.
As long as there were an anonymity function thrown in as well, of course, that maybe we'll talk about that another time. In the same sense that people, anyone can download the Adobe Acrobat Reader for free and view files that they're entitled to, you need to spend more money to buy the Acrobat program itself in order to create the PDF files.
Essentially, that is correct.
Essentially, that's going to be carried over in the policy server because people will be able to use the files using their free downloadable Acrobat Reader, but in order to generate the files, they'll need to belong to a corporation or a government or pay for it themselves, right?
Yes, the author does pay.
The author does have to pay, okay. What kinds of content can be used this way? In addition to text, obviously graphics can be encrypted this way? And
one of the great benefits of PDF is that in addition to having text within a document, you can also have images.
Right.
You can also have audio and even video that you can embed video inside a PDF document today and apply a digital signature and encrypt it to make sure that only the intended recipients can view that video and provide assurances that nobody has changed a single pixel in a single frame of that video.
So, in fact, you can set up a page that has text, graphics, audio, and video, and then encrypt that and put it under the policies of the policy server.
Yes, that is correct.
If someone wanted to do that and wanted to do it so that they could give it out to millions of people if they paid for it, is there are there API hooks or other ways in which this system can be made to work with a billing system that would take credit card information and then make files available to people not with the proper passwords, but with proper passwords that they get by paying for them?
The policy server is really focused on enterprise users.
Right.
In a enterprise environment or a B2B environment. We do have other products, the content server in our ebook product line that is used for more of a consumer copyright protection.
Right.
The policy server itself was not developed with copyright protection as a top priority.
But
we really wanted to focus on more of the confidentiality,
right,
the privacy, intellectual property issues of enterprise documents than what our ebook products do with making sure that the recipients pay for the information that they're reading.
But the ebook and the content server do have the capacity to essentially give access through payment to people?
Yes, absolutely.
And could they be hooked into this?
There are certainly opportunities to use pieces of the technology together.
Right.
We actually have an online ebook store.
Right.
That you can go and actually purchase books online and view them in the free reader. And there are rights management capabilities to make sure that it's only you viewing those. So there are certainly some synergies across the product lines.
Okay. Last minute. Say the last things you want to say about Policy Server and how important you think it's going to be to Adobe and how important it's going to be to the people who use it.
We think that the Adobe Policy Server will provide organizations with added assurances for protecting their information. And there are certainly a number of industries where the information does need protection, whether it's intellectual property, confidentiality, privacy, and we're really working hard to make sure that security is going to be easy for these organizations to apply in those areas, in addition to the other areas we support, such as integrity, authenticity, and providing capabilities through digital signatures.
Okay, and this is going to be tested this summer, and it's going to be available by the end of the year.
That is correct.
All right. I want to thank you very much for talking to us, giving us all this valuable information. Maybe we'll encrypt this, and maybe we won't. But I want to thank you in any case for talking to us on Utopia Media Technology News Network today.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you
later.
Thanks,
Mark.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.